Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with J.J. Cooper and Jim Callis, I'm John Manuel. I want to thank you for the download. Big day at Baseball America today, obviously, with the top 100 prospects being revealed. Feels like every day is a big day at Baseball America, which is one of the reasons why we like working here. But, guys, some girls are bigger than others, as the Smiths saying. And today is a big day for us. We'll see just how big. We're getting close to 50,000 followers on Twitter. If you're not already following us, at Baseball America is the Twitter handle. Please join in to get the 50,000 followers sooner or later.
On Facebook. I mean, absolutely. It wasn't by much, but our Facebook readers got about a 5-minute heads up on who was number one ahead of everyone else today.
Thanks to our content management system, which is creaky, I believe is the best way to say that.
It was intentional, though. I didn't want to get Facebook, you know. So you can also like us on Facebook.
But Jim Callis, you spearhead a couple of projects for us. The two that we're really probably known for the best, our draft coverage and our prospect handbook. And by spearheading those two things, you're as familiar as anybody in the game with these three players. That ranked at the top of our top 100. Now, we went Harper 1, Moore 2, Trout 3. That's Bryce Harper, Matt Moore, Mike Trout. I know that you did not have it that way, and you're at the top of your personal list. I kind of feel like that's one of the reasons why our list is so good, is that it is a consensus list. You also reported on how similar these three players are and how tough the ranking is. Why don't you and JJ discuss a little bit kind of the similarities and how all three of these guys could be ranked one way or the other, but why Harper seems to be the consensus choice of the industry.
Well, I think with Harper, it's just that power jumps out at people. And I think that's why when we, as part of the project, I talked to 11 player personnel experts. And then, we had pretty much every different combination you could with those guys, but Harper came out first, and they actually had Trout ahead of Moore, so Trout 2 and Moore 3. I had Trout 1, Moore 2, Harper 3, and I think 6 of the 8 people who voted on for us had Harper 1, Moore 2, Trout 3. I mean, I think the great thing with these guys, and it's like this with a lot of the prospect stuff, and we keep hammering this point home, there's no definitive right answer. It's a matter of taste. It's a matter of opinion. I think, and I use this analogy a lot, you could throw those guys in the hat and pull them out in any order and defend them. I like Mike Trout's all-around brilliance. I think he can beat you more ways than Bryce Harper. But, if I picked second in a draft and somebody took Trout ahead of me and I got, quote-unquote, stuck with Bryce Harper, I'd have no problem with that either. And at the same time, you can argue, I think, that, and some of the guys did this with the sidebar, that a true number one starter, that type of pitcher, is almost impossible to find and even harder to acquire if he's on another team. And so you have guys who say that's the rarest beast of all, so they take Matt Moore.
JJ, I'm always surprised when I see people, even pro personnel guys, talk about Trout as a five-tool guy and not Harper. I think Bryce Harper, he's a plus runner. He's got a better arm. He's got obviously better power. How is he not a five-tool guy? He's a pure five-tool guy for me.
I think you could argue that when it comes to the actual game of baseball, that Harper is a more valuable five-tool guy. Because in Trout's case, the tool that you have the most questions about is the power. Now,
correct.
This is not a knock on Trout.
Correct.
But the speed doesn't play up. The speed is not going to play as much a part of his game day in, day out, year in, year out for the next 20 years because
I think it's not as impactful as Harper's biggest strength.
The reason I say that is that I was talking, when I did the Mike Trout story for our Player of the Year story, had guys, scouts who scouted him who said, look, if you want Mike Trout to steal 50 bases for you, he can.
Right.
I don't think you want to, though, they'd say, because if you do that, you're running more risk of him getting banged up, of him going on the DL, things like that. It's like not that his speed's not going to be important and not that his speed's still not going to be impressive as he gets older and as he ages and
right.
all. But the point they were making is that he's probably going to be more of a 25-30 steal guy year in, year out because you want him to pick his spots.
Right.
He'll go first to third a lot. He'll go first to home some.
Right.
Those kind of things. He'll make plays in the outfield. Harper, the power, if it just stays what it is, like, you don't have to. Most 19-year-olds, you're almost always talking about, man, and as he gets bigger,
right,
as he fills out,
he'll have more power.
He'll have more power.
That's how we talk about with Trout. That's how we talk about with Trout. Like, he's got the raw power. He's still figuring out how to make it playable, consistent game power.
The crazy thing is Bryce Harper hasn't needed to increase his power to have big league plus power since he was a sophomore in high school.
Pretty much.
And as a sophomore in high school, if you compared his power to big leaguers, you'd say, oh, it compares pretty favorably.
And then he proved it when he would have been a junior in high school when he did it with wood bats. It's junior college competition. You can't get too carried away. But the raw power was there. The thing that surprises me, Jim, is that one of the personnel guys kind of knocked Harper's like base running and defense. Everyone I talked to has always said this guy runs the bases hard, aggressively. He's got 55 or 60 speed on a 20 to 80 scale. And he is an asset defensively. I mean, I think he played 36 games in left field last year at Double A just to get some experience in left field. He had 7 assists in 36 games. I mean, this guy's arm is a weapon. I'm surprised. Are you surprised at all? I feel like Harper, the only reason that Harper, I'm not trying to knock anybody on this. I feel like the biggest reason why Bryce Harper is not a unanimous number one is not just the quality of Moore and Trout. That's significant. I think the biggest reason is the quote that you had in the sidebar, which was his likability is low. That his makeup, likability, however you want to put it, turns off some people. I feel like that's the only reason why he's not the unanimous number one. Not the only. I shouldn't say that. But I feel like that's the biggest reason why he's not the unanimous number one.
I'm not sure about that because, you know, the thing is there are a lot of the best players in baseball aren't particularly likable. Barry Bonds, who's probably the greatest hitter we've seen in the last, 50 years, is not real likable.
Right, and it's mid-90s.
To put it mildly.
Mid-90s, though, Jim, because he wasn't likable, he resented the fact that he wasn't considered as good as Ken Griffey Jr., that Ken Griffey Jr., who was more likable, was considered the best all-around player in baseball when Bonds felt that he clearly was.
I think fans might have felt that way. I don't think you would have had teams, said, hey, we'd rather have Griffey than Bond. What I was getting at is I don't think likability is that major. I mean, a couple guys brought up his makeup, and a couple guys also brought up the makeup in the context that he's so focused on baseball, which maybe isn't a good thing for his maturity, but it's a good thing for him being the best player he can be. I just think people, again, you're nitpicking when you're comparing these guys.
Right.
There are some people who question if Harper's really going to hit for much average because they think, and I know he's made strides with it, but they think that he's a max effort isn't the best way to describe his swing, but he swings with some effort that he takes a healthy cut.
Yep.
And they wonder against really good pitching, is he going to hit for average? I think part of that's because he hit 260 in Double A last year, even though he was 19. I think in terms of the speed and the defense, comparing him to Trout, Trout's an up the middle guy. And I think some people give him an edge because Harper's a corner guy. Harper is a plus runner, but he's more of a plus runner underway. And over time, as he gets bigger and stronger, is he really going to be a plus runner? I mean, I'm just nitpicking. I have no problems with Bryce Harper. And I do think they both are five-tool players in different ways. And I think the reason – I don't think he'd be unanimous, but I think the reason that he's the number one guy for us and he was the number one guy in the people I surveyed is like what you guys were just alluding to. If you're going to pick one tool that any of these guys have, or really one tool that any prospect in baseball has right now, you take Bryce Harper's power. And I've used this line a few times that you almost can't put any kind of projection on him because it's almost too limiting. Like for me, any minor leaguer, I think in a way it's ridiculous to say that guy's going to hit more than 40 home runs in the big leagues. Yeah, that 40 home runs is even a crazy projection. But like 40 home runs seems low for Bryce Harper. I had an Ask the A question a couple weeks ago where somebody said, oh, they thought it was crazy. People were putting him in the same class as Mike Stanton. How could you say he has better power than Mike Stanton? Well, if I had to stack those two guys up and you made me bet my life on who's going to hit more home runs in the big leagues over the long haul, I'd take Bryce Harper. And I love Mike Stanton. Mike Stanton might hit, put crazy projections out there. If you're going to bet on guys in the big leagues, young guys, to get to 500 home runs, I mean – I'll put that on Mike Stanton, and Bryce Harper has more power, I think, more raw power than Mike Stanton. He's done more at his age than Mike Stanton was doing at that age. So,
to me, those guys are so similar in terms of their power, and the one edge to me, I hate to sound like Matt Eddy on this one, but I do think that the biggest edge is that Bryce Harper's left-handed. I think it helps. I think he's going to have the platoon advantage a lot more than Mike Stanton is, and that's why I think he's going to hit more home runs. That maybe I'm overdoing it on the platoon advantage, but I think it helps, and I really think it's amazing But when you talk about his 40 home run, you know, potential and that kind of thing, and that there are some people who question his ability to hit for average and whether he'll be a 260 hitter or better than that, that when you did a sidebar on comparisons that you got on these two players, I loved the comparison you got comparing Bryce Harper to Reggie Jackson. I think it fits in so many ways. Obviously, Harper's a little bit bigger physically than Reginald Martinez Jackson was and is. I can't imagine any other player in today's age calling himself the straw that stirs the drink more than Bryce Harper, you know?
And he seems to want to play for the Yankees already, too. So, no, I agree. I love that comp, too. It's interesting because it was hard to compare these guys to people. I thought there were great comps on all these guys. You know, Bryce Harper, people, the power is so ridiculous. People were having a hard time with that comp.
Right.
You know, Matt Moore, his stuff is so unique. It was hard to come up with a good comp. I got a couple Mark Langstons on him.
I love the Mark Langston comp because physically there's some resemblance as well as far as just the body type.
You know, and then I had a guy compare him to Randy Johnson, say, you know, Matt Moore's, you know, more developed than Randy Johnson was at the same age. Obviously, he's not 6'10", but if you look at the stuff and the way they can dominate, that was good. You know, I've heard Mickey Mantle comps on Mike Trout back to when he was in the Midwest League, and I actually heard a new one. I kind of like he got compared to a Ricky Henderson in center field, which I thought was an interesting one.
I think I liked that comp almost better than the Reggie Jackson. And what JJ was talking about before, and JJ had to step away a little bit to do a radio show. But what JJ mentioned before about like the Ricky Henderson type, like if there's anybody who physically could withstand the rigors of stealing 100 bases, I could see Mike Trout because he got that comp to Brian Urlacher, which we've had previously when he was in the Futures game a couple years ago too. I really like that comparison because Ricky Henderson was – I mean you compare Ricky Henderson to, say, a Vince Coleman or Willie Wilson or other Omar Moreno, other prolific base stealers of that artificial surface era, and the separator is that Ricky was much more physical, thicker, stronger, and more explosive than those other guys who were kind of like greyhounds. And that's not, that's not Ricky Henderson and that's not Mike Trout. They're more like, I guess you'd say thoroughbreds where – you know, obviously a horse is going to be a little bit more physical than a greyhound. I'm going crazy with the comps there. But I love the physicality and the power-speed comparison between Trout and Ricky Henderson. I mean, that's putting a lot on a player. Ricky Henderson is one of the most unique players in baseball history. But I loved that comparison. And do you think Mike Trout, do you think he's physical enough to – do you think he'll be a guy who steals those kind of bases, Jim? I know the game seems to have changed a little bit, but do you think his speed will play or do you think he's going to be more of a power guy as his game evolves?
Oh, man, I think that'll be one of the things that's fun to see with Trout. I mean, I do think – I mean, we talk about the 20-80 scouting scale, and guys will joke and say, you know, Trout's an 85 runner or Trout's a 90 runner. I just think the game's changed, and I don't think he – I don't think you're going to have, you know, Mike Trout calling himself Mike, and I don't think he's got that kind of ego where he's going to go out and try to steal 100-plus bases. You know, I don't think today, like JJ was saying, you know, you want to have your guy beat his body up. I do think he has the speed that if they wanted to make him a leadoff hitter and said, run wild, you know, you got the green light, we want you to run at any time. I think he could lead the American League in steals one year if he wanted, but at the same time, you know, I think his power is valuable. I mean, I do think, you know, if you want to kind of, you know, average what people projected his power at, I think they see him as a 20 to 25 home run guy. So I think, you know, I think he could be that leadoff guy with that big power if you wanted him to be. He could also, I mean, I think be a number three hitter. It'll be interesting to see what the Angels do with him over the long haul.
It's the Baseball America podcast. John Manuel and Jim Callis will be joined again later by J.J. Cooper. We've talked about our top trio. Jim, unless you want to go back to those guys, I think the other interesting point to bring up early in the top 100 is the two big off-season international signees who are on our top 100. Yu Darvish, the Japanese right-hander, signed with the Texas Rangers back in December. I guess it was, or maybe it was early January, I should say. And Yoenis Cespedes, who signed about a week and a half ago, mid-February, with the Oakland Athletics, who ranked Darvish 4th, Cespedes 14th, Jim. One of our Twitter questions, Ryan Cox said, I don't understand why people consider Darvish a prospect, but he's number 4 on Baseball America's Top 100. I think I already answered him. It's pretty easy. He's technically a rookie by Major League Baseball's rules, and therefore except for service time, we follow those rules for prospect eligibility, so it's kind of a no-brainer. Obviously, he's a little bit different as a prospect, but I thought it was pretty pretty telling that he ranks fourth, Jim. We obviously expect big things from you, Darvish. He was a little bit easier to rank, though, than Yoenis Cespedes.
Yeah, I mean, with both these guys, you know, and I think more of the Cubans and the Japanese major leaguers in particular, but I think with both groups of players, and I've taken heat for saying this on Twitter, those guys get so overhyped that I'm a little skeptical of them just from the standpoint of living up to their hype. You know, Daisuke Matsuzaka was, you know, and I thought he would be. We had him ranked number one on our list a few years ago. You know, was supposed to be, you know, this guy with 8+ pitches and, you know, the gyro ball and could do whatever he wanted. And he had a couple of years and then he tailed off. And he wasn't, you know, he wasn't the superstar he was supposed to be. You know, Darvish is supposed to be better than Matsuzaka. And I think he is, you know, it sounds like, you know, but, you know, you're hearing the same types of things. You know, the guy's got like 10+ pitches and, you know, I almost expect you, Darvish, to throw with both hands or maybe even have like a third arm and throw with that arm too. But, so the hype on these guys is crazy. You know, Yoenis Cespedes has, you know, the YouTube video and, you know, he he's not a 5-tool player. He's like a 10-tool player and he can leg press 3,000 pounds. And,
right.
You know, jump tall buildings. You know, the hype on these guys is unimaginable. You know, but at the same time, I think even with that skepticism, you can't deny what these guys bring to the table. I do think if you didn't have these elite prospects at the top of the list, Darvish would have been a number one in a lot of years. And I think, you know, for the sake of comparison, you know, after you get past those three, you know, the next guy behind Darvish is Julio Teheran. Well, to me, you know, Darvish has a longer track record. You know, Japan to me, the Japan's major leagues, I would place, you know, talking to other people, as somewhere between AAA and the U.S. major leagues. So I think Darvish has proven himself at a higher level.
It's like between AAA and the National League. That's where it is.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, that one to me was kind of easy. I mean, we talked about this. I'd ask BA questions. I knew we had the big three, and to me, even with my skepticism in the back of my mind, I knew Darvish would be my number four, and I think most of us had a number four on our list.
Correct.
You know, Cespedes is tougher because, you know, with the Cuban players, I mean, you just look at the last guy who was hyped anywhere close to this, Aroldis Chapman. Well, here we are 2 years into Aroldis Chapman's major league career. Looks to me like Aroldis Chapman isn't going to be more than relief pitcher. Isn't probably, you know, going to be worth that contract they gave him or that huge signing bonus. I mean, he's a good player. He's interesting, but he's still unpolished. And with Cespedes, you know, we saw a very limited taste of him in the Dominican Winter League playoffs. And you know, you're not going to read too much into 30 or 40 at-bats, but he looked a little overmatched. Some guys are wondering, you know, at least the scouts I've talked to, you know, very interesting guy. But, you know, he's got these raw tools, but how polished are they? How quick are they going to play? And again, you still can't get past the cool. So even though you have these questions about him, you know, he winds up being number 14 on our list. I mean, I think, you know, Darvish to me was a pretty clear answer. For me, Cespedes, if we wanted to be really aggressive, we probably could have ranked him as high as a seventh on our list. And if we wanted to be ultra conservative, you know, we could have ranked him maybe as low as 25 on the list, and we kind of split the difference.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair ranking where we put him. I mean, we put him behind a guy who reached double A last year, and Tyler Skaggs, who's left-handed, who's 6 years younger, and who was fourth in the minor league in strikeouts. I mean, we put him behind a guy who's no slouch. He's two spots behind Garrett Cole, number one overall pick in last year's draft, a guy who, you know, sits 96-98 with his fastball. You know, we have him behind Manny Machado, a teenage shortstop with power. I mean, we put him behind some pretty stout dudes. So I liked our placement of Cespedes. I think he was... I agree with you. I think he's very difficult to rank, and I'll say this again. I mean, the adjustments for all Latin American players are very difficult. I don't think any of us can really appreciate what some of those guys go through, and I think it's even more difficult for Cuban players, and the track record of those Cuban guys, for better or for worse, with the exception of Aroldis Chapman, most of them have come to the United States and gotten a lot bigger than what they were in Cuba, whether it's Kendrys Morales, Jose Contreras, Alexi Ramirez, I guess, is another exception, but that guy looks like he has the metabolism of the planet Mercury. He's very fast, and very fast metabolism. Mercury, if you don't know, the closest planet, goes around the sun real fast. Obviously, I've been hanging out with my 7-year-old son too much. But the point is, those guys are the exceptions. Most of these Cuban guys come to the United States, and they just get bigger because they have food. And it's a big difference. The diet and the money are big adjustments for any young person to make. And I think you throw in the depravity of the Cuban economy. I think it's a factor. So I'm really interested in Cespedes. Jim, you and I have not talked about this, but I think Oakland is a good landing place for him just because the pressure will be a lot lower for him to immediately be successful in Oakland.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I do think there's pressure in the standpoint that he's already – I think he's got the highest salary of anybody on their current roster.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
they do have a lower payroll. And so I think – you know, I think there's going to be some disappointment locally if he doesn't perform well, you know, pretty quickly. But at the same time, I mean, that's a depressed fan base. That's a team that's not expected to contend. It's not like if the Yankees went out and signed Yoenis Cespedes and the New York Post would be ripping him on the back page, you know, three weeks into his career. So I totally agree with you. I do think this is one of the better places for him to develop, although he probably could have picked a better ballpark to hit in. It's one of the least favorable ballparks. So I'm really not expecting – we haven't even talked about rookies yet. You know, we have rookie rankings coming up over the horizon of Baseball America. I'm not convinced this guy's going to come out and have a real big rookie year.
Yeah, I think it definitely remains to be seen. He'll be pretty high on my rookie list, but I just think the infusion of talent in the American League West this offseason, Jim, is a story in and of itself. Mike Trout will graduate and be a full-time big leaguer. Yu Darvish, that's numbers 3 and 4. Number 6, Jesus Montero, gets traded from the Yankees into the Mariners. He's our number 6 prospect. And then you look down at Cespedes, number 14. So all four American League West, current members of the American League West, are represented. All four of those guys are going to be rookies this year in the big leagues, and that's a lot of impact talent. If you like young big leaguers, that is as good of a division as any to follow. It's the Baseball America podcast with Jean and Jim, talking a little bit about our top 100 prospects. Jim, let's take a couple Twitter questions.
Hey, John, just real quick, I wanted to follow up on that last point, too.
Okay,
I mean,
good.
It even goes beyond that because you have Danny Holdson, who might be up this year for the Mariners.
Oh, yeah.
You've got the guys who came over in the A's trades, Jared Parker, Brad Peacock, I think are going to be in the A's rotation for most of the season. You know, Martin Perez could surface in Texas at some point during the season.
I wouldn't even rule out. Got to the big leagues with the A's this year, too.
Yep, I wouldn't even rule out. I don't think he'll come up till late in the year, but Jurickson Profar, if that guy keeps developing like he has the last 2 years, they may have room for him in their outfield.
Don't forget Leonis Martin.
They obviously have Elvis Andrus at short. Yeah,
Leonis Martin. Further down the list. I mean, Mike Gault shifted over to first base. This spring he's shifting from
James Paxton could be another guy who gets called up. I mean, that division, we could almost do top 20 potential rookies in the AL West and fill out a whole list.
Oh, there's no doubt. The American League West, you have the number one organization in Texas as the snapshot right now. Then I'd say, you know, the Mariners have this very, very stout top 4 or 5 with their pitching trio of Tawan Walker and the two lefties you mentioned, Danny Holdson and James Paxton, plus Jesus Montero. And then I like Nick Franklin, switch hitting, power hitting middle infielder. And I know there's some questions about how legitimate the power is, but sign me up for Nick Franklin. I know I shouldn't go by my eyes, but it's that home run he hit the left center field off Garrett Cole in the Rising Stars game in the Arizona Fall League. It was just such easy power. Sign me up for Nick Franklin. And then, the Angels system doesn't have great depth, but it certainly is stout at the top with Trout. And then the A's went from a horrible system, with a lot of older guys, to a system with a lot of vibrant talent because of the trades they made this offseason. And then you add Cespedes as the cherry kind of on top. Let's take a couple of these Twitter questions, Jim, and there are a lot of them at Baseball America. Remember, go follow us. We're close to 50,000 followers. So, we'd love to have more of you. What makes Dylan Bundy 14 spots better than Archie Bradley? That's from Jordan Mendelblatt. Jim, my answer would be not a whole lot. That was a tough one. And Archie Bradley, I think we talked about this in the meeting, he was one of the toughest guys for us to rank. It's 15 spots. Bradley is 10. And Bradley's at 25 and Bundy's at 10. But Archie Bradley is pretty – he almost sounds too good to be true. He's a pretty great prospect to have at number 25 on a top 100.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's not much difference between stuff. You know, Bradley's bigger. I think the difference is polish, consistency, command. Not that the Bradley's this, you know, Colt Griffin guy, you know, can't hit the broadside of a barn or anything. But I just think Bundy is that much more polished. And I think if you look at our rankings, I think it would reflect what we heard from a lot of people in baseball over the last year. And even when I was doing the Trout more Harper thing, John, Dylan Bundy worked his way into a conversation. I had a personnel guy say, don't be surprised, you know, that guy might make it to the big leagues a lot quicker than anybody realizes. And he was saying it wouldn't shock him if, you know, basically he thought Bundy would be prepared enough to pitch in the big leagues by the end of the season, perhaps. But I think the difference is we have Bundy kind of grouped with the college picks from last year's draft, because even though he came out of high school, he was really considered this polished college type pitcher, even though he'd only come out of high school. And I know Royals fans, I continue to argue with them. Royals really wanted a polished pitcher in last year's draft. You know, not that they weren't thrilled to get Bubba Starling and his potential, but I know for a fact, because I've been told this by the Royals, that if any of the pitchers who went ahead of him had been there at number five, and that includes Dylan Bundy, even though he's a high school guy, they considered him that polished, they would have taken him because of their need for pitching. And so I think that's the difference, is just the polish, and that Bundy, we're kind of treating him more as a college pick out of last year's draft, and Bradley, you know, and he's right behind Bubba Starling, you know, he's grouped with the, you know, those are the top two high school picks from last year's draft.
Got a couple other questions on Twitter that are worth taking. War Eagle, AU Mitty, so obviously an Auburn fan, asks, how close were Juris Familia and Grant Green to breaking into the top 100? Jim, I don't have my spreadsheet with me, but I know both those guys got considerable votes for the top 100. They were both like in that 101 to 125 range, weren't they?
Well, Green was, Familia wasn't. Familia, we had eight people. People wonder how we did this. We had eight people do a preliminary top 150, and then we mash them together in a spreadsheet, and then in such discussions ensue. One person had Juris Familia in the top 100, and he got three votes for the top 150. So he wasn't particularly close. I'd say if we were doing this as a straight ranking all the way down, he would have been about 150, 160. Okay. You know, Grant Green was in that mix of guys who just missed. Two of us had him. I had him in my top 100. Two of the eight people had him in their top 100. Two more had him just missing, and seven of the eight had him in the top 150. So he was close. I think the difference with him making it or not making it is, and even though I put him in my top 100, I share this skepticism, is he really going to stay in center field? I don't know if I really think he runs well enough to be a center fielder. I see him as more of a third baseman, really, than a center fielder. I think that would be where he would profile best when you look at everything. You know, I don't think he's a shortstop at the major league level. And I think, you know, if he had proven he could play center field, or more people believed he could play center field, he probably makes the top 100.
I agree with you. I think I'd like to see him be more on the dirt, and I really question the power. I really like Grant Green. He hit for a lot of power in his first pro season, but it was in the Cal League. So the Thomas Neal corollary, as I'm going to start calling it, I'm going to have a little skepticism about guys who have the only power, their only home run power really shows up in the Cal League. And Grant Green did not hit for home run power in Double A last year. So I know it's Midland. I know that the A's have talked to us about the fact that Sacramento and Midland are not big home run parks that are in leagues that are perceived as offensive home run leagues. But to me, Grant Green is more of a, you know, 15 to 20 home run guy max. So I like him as like a Joe Randa type third baseman. I hate to always throw out Joe Randa there, but I like him more as a solid to maybe a slightly above average offensive third baseman. I don't think he's got corner outfield power. He's a little bit of a tweener for me in a lot of ways. I like him personally. All my interactions with Grant Green have been great. I think he's going to be a good big leaguer, but I don't think he's going to be a star. Take a couple other Twitter questions. Joey Alfieri wanted to know, he knows Jim likes Rendon over Tawan Walker. Who would the rest of you prefer building around? Well, obviously our consensus was Anthony Rendon over Tawan Walker, but they're right next to each other at 19-20. Jim, it seems like really the only question any of us have about Anthony Rendon is the arm. That's the only issue I have, is will he be healthy? 2 years ago, I was not all the way there with you on Rendon greater than Harper. I thought then, and I think even now, that I think you undersell Bryce Harper's hitting ability a little bit. I think the effort in his game is not there because he's I mean, he emulates Pete Rose. I mean, you know, that's his favorite all-time player, so that's why his game has – I'm surprised that his effort is seen as a negative. I understand why it is, but I'm surprised by it because I think he's shown that he can – he does make – no one makes the park look small like that guy. We talked about Harper. But to me, Rendon –
yeah, I don't think anybody – John, just – I don't think people necessarily see it as a negative. They just think that because of his effort and, you know, one guy make a comment that, you know, he tries to hit every ball 450.
Right.
And then if he doesn't tone that down – he's not going to hit for high average. And again, it's nitpicking. You're talking about great
right.
players. You start really looking at them under the fine microscope. I don't think there's anybody who doesn't think he's going to be a great player.
I've never quite thought that Rendon's bat was going to be as impactful as Harper's. I think he's more of a pure hitter. I don't think he has Bryce Harper. I think he's more of like a 60 power. I don't think he's anywhere close to an 80 power. He might be a 70 hit, a 60 power. But I love Anthony Rendon, and once he proves – Anthony Rendon is the guy who's, to me, he could be number one on this list next year. If he just goes to high A and double A, stays healthy, shows you can play third base or second base, and rakes the way I think Anthony Rendon could rake, he could be number one on this list next year, Jim. I feel that strongly about Anthony Rendon. I just want to see him healthy and playing a defensive position in 2012. But Tawan Walker could very well be – the number one pitcher on this list next year. I'm looking at the pitchers ahead of him. Most of those guys are probably going to graduate to the big leagues this year. Those two guys at 19-20 are both guys I'd build my franchise around.
No, okay. I totally agree. And again, you know, it's just a matter of preference. You know, we had 8 people vote on this. 5 people liked Rendon more than Walker. 3 people liked Walker more than Rendon. I think one person had him back to back, and most of us had them very, very close together. Rip JJ in his absence. JJ
no,
had
here.
Rendon at number 50
here.
On the list. Way too low. Way too low. So anyway, Rendon wouldn't be next to Walker. I agree. And, you know, all reports are he's healthy. They're going to play him even at shortstop some, I guess, this spring and early in the season, which I think tells you, you know, you wouldn't be doing that if the guy's arm wasn't healthy. I think, you know, I'll go out on a limb. I think Anthony Rendon's got a great chance to be our minor league player of the year this year.
And I'll make I think Anthony Rendon could end up being one of the best players on this list. But my concern, and I've said this, now spring training's here now, so the good news is we're actually going to get to see him hopefully play. My concern was that he was supposed to be fine, and it went, oh, he's going to go to Arizona Fall League, and it kept getting pushed back, and it kept getting pushed back, and then he never did go to the Arizona Fall League. I always have some concerns when guys who are supposed to be fine, the window of when they're going to be healthy keeps getting pushed back. And again, I'm the skeptic on this just from the standpoint of I want to see him healthy, kind of what John said. I want to see him healthy and playing a position for multiple months because you can call all the injuries that he's had fluky. Undoubtedly you can. At the same time, he's had a series of injuries, and some of these have the potential to be nagging injuries. The shoulder is a problem that could, if it kind of lingers, continue to affect him. And that's really the only knock that there is on Anthony Rendon right now. But that, to me, that's the reason I'm being the skeptic on him, but I'm being the skeptic because I'll be much higher on him in the midseason top 50 if he's been playing a full couple of months at that point and been healthy.
The Baseball America podcast with John Manuel, J.J. Cooper, and Jim Callis. Jim, let's go to a couple of – I guess I always like to call it personal cheese balls. Who's like – I don't know if there was a guy in the list that you maybe had that maybe you feel like is a little bit lower than he was maybe on your personal list, or who you think is not necessarily maybe lower, but maybe who's your pick to click lower in our top 100, who you think is going to really break into the top after the 2012 season?
Well, I'll go with Anthony Rendon. Just joking. I had him number 9 on my
that
list.
That is your guy, though.
That's
to my mind.
I'd say my top, you know, guys who were in my top 50. I think the one guy who I felt like got undersold a little bit was Jake Marisnyk. I actually like him better, you know, than fellow Blue Jays outfielder Anthony Gost, because I think he's got a much better field to hit, and I think his tools are. You know, I think Andy Ghost has a little bit better raw tools, but I think Marisnyk's are comparable. I think he's got better field to hit. So he was a guy I like. In terms of guys who wound up not making the list,
I know where you're going.
You know, probably my number one guy was Alex Meyer, I guess, of the Nationals. Who
that's not where I thought you were going.
You know, it's
at
interesting.
All.
You didn't think I was going there? Okay.
No, I thought you were going Matt
Barnes. Yeah, it's funny because I've always – what's that?
I thought you were going to say Matt Barnes.
Well, I didn't have him ranked as high, but you do bring up Matt Barnes, who I did bitterly complain about a little bit when we were doing this, and you know, it's hard to get all your different rankings to line up. And my point was that we have Sonny Gray of the A's is on here at number, I think, 65 on our top 100. And we've had Matt Barnes and Sonny Gray neck and neck through college with our draft rankings, and I think they're very comparable. They went back to back in the draft, and Sonny Gray's at 65, and Matt Barnes didn't make it. But I do think, in terms of the guy who I think was my highest rated player who didn't make it, that would be Alex Meyer.
I like Alex Meyer, but I've always liked Matt Barnes a little better. So I'm surprised that you had Meyer ahead of Barnes. You know, to me, I'll be fascinated to see. There's actually two guys in the 90s, high school pitchers from last year's draft, JJ. I'll be really interested to watch, and that's Taylor Guerrieri and Daniel Norris. Stuff-wise, Taylor Guerrieri is closer to Dylan Bundy and R.G. Bradley than he is in these rankings as far as 10 and 25, and he's 90. His stuff is not at their level in terms of consistency, but he flashed comparable fastball, comparable breaking ball. I mean, it wasn't a consensus, but there were some cross-checkers last year in the draft, Jim, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, who thought that he was – there were a lot of cross-checkers and scouting directors who thought that there were times where they saw him and he had the third best stuff in the high school class after only Bundy and Bradley. So I think he's in exactly the right organization for him. The Rays will take it slow. I don't see him leaping up for the 2013 top 100. I do see him doing that in 2014. And then I also Daniel Norris. I just think Daniel Norris, again, the Blue Jays have such depth, they could bring him along slowly. But I like physical left-handers. Again, the consistency was the issue with both those guys. They flashed it. I'll be fascinated to watch, but I expect both those guys to really take some quantum leaps up this list. It might not be for 2013, but I look for both these guys to be top 20 prospects in 2014.
The two guys for me that jump out is at the back end of the list is Jonathan Scope at 82 and Chesler Cuthbert, who I believe is at 84. Two guys who are pretty close together.
Scope is kind of fascinating.
I think that Scope, because he's kind of teamed up with Manny Machado, I think that that he actually defensively, one of the things that's a kind of a hurdle for him is figuring out where he's going to play. But that's not because he can't handle positions. It's because, well, he could probably stick at shortstop at least for a little while, but you've got Machado, so you're not going to. And then if it wasn't for that, then, okay, the question becomes, does he become a second baseman or a third baseman? And I've had scouts tell me kind of both sides of that. There's some guys say, I think he could be an all-star third baseman. I've had other people say, hey, let's just go, you know, second base with him and leave it, let him kind of settle in there where he could be an impact middle up the middle guy. Cuthbert, I know that Jim and I have had a disagreement on this. I think that for Cuthbert, I think he's going to stick at third base long term. I think he's going to be an impact bat. I know that Jim has talked to some scouts who think differently. Think he's going to be a little too thick to stick at the position long term. But that's, to me, I think Cuthbert's going to be a third baseman. I think he's a better third baseman than Moustakas. I know Moustakas plays short in the Midwest League. Cuthbert played third, but I think Cuthbert has a much better chance of sticking at third base long term than Moustakas does, maybe even. And then I think he's going to be an impact bat. So those are the two guys I wouldn't be surprised to see kind of move up significantly next year.
I'm a fan of both those players. Scope is the one who, like, I believe more in Cuthbert. Scope, I just want to see you know, where he settles in position wise. His profile is a little bit tougher to read without knowing.
To me,
I
put him at second base. To me, if you're the Orioles, not that the Orioles don't have a plethora of needs, but if you're the Orioles, to me, I put him at second base. I put Machado at short. I let those two guys work together and let them just move up and be your middle infield by late 2013 at least.
Yeah, and one thing that also jumped out to me a little bit here, guys, is that we were talking about the top 100, you know, by organization. We break it down by the numbers. Not a surprise to me that we have the Rangers with six, the Padres with six. You know, I think we know the Rangers are deep and have impact talent. The Padres, I think we know they're one of the deepest farm systems in the game. The Cardinals, again, a pretty solid, deep system. It's still a little bit of a surprise that they're at six.
Right, but especially because the thing that jumps out with them is it's more of kind of the they have some potential impact guys in that six.
Yeah, they really do. Well, obviously, Shelby Miller's in our top 10. I think Carlos.
That's another guy. By the way, another guy who could really move up. Now, he's a bat guy. I mean, it's limited to the bat more than anything, but Oscar Tavares.
Right.
He had a great year in the Midwest League this year. If he follows that up by doing it again in the FSL.
And the big question is, did he have a great year or did he have a great 2 months, Jim? That's where Jim would go, right?
Well, I wouldn't say 2 months. I mean, he didn't play a full season. He was hurt. They're also – we talk about makeup. It gives me a little bit of doubt when you see the guy getting benched in the playoffs for lack of effort and getting benched during the season for lack of effort. So he's a very interesting guy. I still think, you know, for a guy who hit 380 – he still has, you know, maybe more to prove than the typical guy who had 380 in low Class A. I'd like to see him over a full season this year, you know, at a higher level, and see if those effort questions go away.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But I do like the Cardinals. I think it's surprising. The A's with six, you know, again, it's Cespedes and the trade guy, so it's not a big of a surprise. I guess to me, the Cardinals are the biggest surprise there, Jim. I just don't think of them as a six top 100. I've always thought of them as more of a depth organization under the Jeff Luhnow scouting administration regime, however you want to put it. But it seems like he left their farm system in about as good a shape as he possibly could have.
He did, you know, and I think the reason they have the six is they've been aggressive. I mean, they went over slot to get Shelby Miller, who slid in the draft because of his asking price. They spent a lot of money on Carlos Martinez. Went over slot, gave a big league contract to Zach Cox. And you look at the other guys on this list. You know, Tavares. You know, Luhnow helped reinvigorate their international program, which had really fallen by the wayside. And then they have a couple of premium draft picks in Colton Wong and Terrell Jenkins. And I mean, Lance Lynn. You know, we argued about him some too. I mean, Lance Lynn was very close to making this list also. Maybe not as high a ceiling as some of these other guys, but you know, not very much left to prove in the big leagues at all. I mean, I think he's about as guaranteed a job in the big leagues as much as anybody who's on this list. You know, playoff hero for the Cardinals. They very well could have had seven.
We've also got, I don't think we planned it out this way, and it's harder for us to do in the organization top 30s in the prospect handbook, where we kind of have like take a flyer guy at number 30. I know I kind of do that usually in my top 50 in the book. But I do think we always try to put a whole bit higher upside guy at number 100, and we kind of did that this year with Christian Villanueva.
Which let's give a little insight here.
There's it's an interesting background because our initial top 100, number 100, should I reveal his name?
Yes.
Tommy Joseph of the Giants organization initially was our number 100.
Sorry, Tommy, you were oh so close.
And then Yoenis Cespedes decided to sign before we went to press with the top 100 with the Oakland A's. And so to put in Cespedes, I like saying his name both ways, obviously, because I keep going back and forth. But when he was added to the list, that bumped everyone behind him down a notch. So Christian Villanueva went from number 99 to number 100. But he almost feels
100.
Like a more number 100, JJ, yeah.
He's a guy who, another one of those guys who a year from now we could be going, wow, this guy really rocketed up the list because he has that potential.
Yeah, and he's a high-ceiling guy. And honestly, he just seemed. I almost felt like it was made more sense also to have a Ranger at number 100. They're the ultimate high risk, high reward farm system right now. But I thought he was a perfect number 100.
Let's go. Yeah, let's give this. This is essentially the DVD commentary part here.
Sure.
Beyond Joseph, there were several other guys that we did talk about. I'm trying to remember. So Alex Meyer was at least brought up as another one of the just missed. Let's help me here a little bit. I'm trying to remember a couple of the other guys that we talked about as far as the just missed.
Well, Jonathan Villar was in that conversation. I think what happened with Jonathan Villar, the shortstop of the Astros, I did our Astros rankings. I kind of was the one who started our grades stuff, but I didn't exactly hone them. I just came up with the crazy ideas. But I think I was high on his grade. If he was going to be a 65, he should have been a 65 extreme. I think he's a 65 high. He probably should have been a 60 high. I think his grade being that high prompted a few people on the staff to rank him a little bit higher. So he was initially on the top 100, and then we started off the meeting, and I kind of advocated for pulling him out of the top 100. I think that kind of made it easy for the guy who ranked him and has been like captain of the Jonathan Villar fan club to remove him from the top 100.
If you were saying no Villar in the top 100, it was going to be hard for someone to make a case for Villar in the top
100. I love Jonathan Villar, but he needs to show more with the bat than 153 strikeouts, you know. Well, thanks again for Jim Callis joining us. John Manuel and J.J. Cooper are going to stick with the podcast with the extra DVD extras, as you said, J.J. We were just talking about Jonathan Villar was a guy who narrowly missed. I know Chris Owings is a Diamondbacks prospect that I'm a little bit higher on. It was a guy who just missed. Who were some other guys that maybe you thought, maybe who were on your personal top 100 who didn't quite make the cut?
We were debating closers at the end of it.
Right.
We got the guy who jumped out was I'm trying to remember who was it. We were talking about setup men versus closers at the very end of our meeting.
Because when you're discussing
this, Kelvin Herrera was a guy who was a close. Who almost made it, and the argument is I don't think we've ever put a setup man, a guy we projected as a setup man,
right,
on the
Kelvin
top
Herrera was one that jumped out because Will Lingo had him so high on his personal top 50, and then he came into the meeting and was like, you know, I was probably a little overheated on Kelvin Herrera. It's the Alberto Callaspo rule. Will gets overheated about one player every year in his top 50, usually a Texas leaguer, because Will does the Texas League and runs him up the list. So Callaspo was one that he famously did, and Callaspo's had a nice big league career. I think Kelvin Herrera is going to have a nice big league career. I don't think it would have been bad if he'd been on the top 100.
But I'm trying to remember. There was a setup guy.
Oh, it was Lance Lynn. Lance Lynn was the divisive player.
That was a very divisive player because there was some arguments to have Lance Lynn on the top 100. The argument being, solid stuff. He's done it in playoff pressure already.
He's one of our very few safes in the whole book on the grade risk factor scale.
And then there was people like me arguing no. And the argument being, okay, doesn't look like he's going to end up moving back to the rotation anytime soon with the Cardinals. He's not, and they don't view him as a closer. And to me, a setup man, the impact of a setup man is just, I'll put it this way. If you give me a choice of Christian Villanueva or a solid setup man, maybe I'm going too risky, but I'm going to take the high-ceiling guy who could be an impact player.
And the funny thing is I actually had this exact conversation with John Mozeliak, of the general manager of the Cardinals, obviously the World Series champion Cardinals, so he clearly knows a lot about what he's doing. But we had this conversation at the winter meetings when we were presenting him with our Organization of the Year award, and it was directly number 94, Tyrell Jenkins, versus Lance Lynn, and he was like, how on earth can you rank Tyrell Jenkins ahead of Lance Lynn? And that was his quote. Like, he said it to me, and he had some strength in his conviction, JJ. He was like, how can you do this? Tyrell Jenkins is in the Appy League, and I think he may have dropped in another word in between. He was like, Tyrell Jenkins is in the Appy League. He probably didn't. John Mosey likes a little bit more culture than I am. And Lance Lynn, he said, was throwing 96 miles an hour, under pressure, setting up Game 7 of the World Series. And I didn't have a great answer for him other than that's Lance Lynn. That might be the peak of Lance Lynn's career, and that's a good peak. That might be what he is for 5 years. But Tyrell Jenkins has a chance to be truly special. And I think if you took
a front-end rotation starter.
And I think of the 30 organizations, if there was a draft of players, and all, if you just stopped them, I think that Tyrell Jenkins would go in that draft before Lance Lynn would go.
I'll put it this way. I think right now it depends on the organization and what their scouting reports say about Jenkins.
Yeah.
But if you're making a trade with the Cardinals and they said, okay, the guy you can have is Lance Lynn or Tyrell Jenkins.
I think the majority of clubs would take Tyrell Jenkins. I know it's not all, and nothing is absolute like Jim talks about. But for me, I really do think more likely teams to take Tyrell Jenkins because of that upside.
But again, and those were two that were right side by side. They're not far. This is the thing we make the point. Right now, there are no wrong answers.
Right.
You want to argue Lance Lynn. Now, the great thing about it is down the road, there will be a right answer.
That's right. Down the road, the answer will evince itself. I mean, Chris Archer is an example of this. Chris Archer might wind up as a setup man. He might wind up Lance Lynn. And he's flashed that potential in 2010, where he looked like a frontline starter. I think
it's a little tough in the organization he is to get that opportunity anytime soon. But
and
yeah.
I think it's more likely, JJ, that he's going to wind up in the bullpen. I just think he's going to wind up a closer, not a setup man. That slider. I mean, this guy could be Brad Lidge. In my mind, that's kind of who I think of Chris Archer. He reminds me of because his slider is so devastating. And he relies on it so much, kind of like Brad Lidge. And when he wants to, he's got 96. Brad Lidge, when he wanted to, when he was younger, had 98, 100, making the cross-racial comp right now. I'm throwing a Brad Lidge on Chris Archer. But that's why, for me, he still deserved to be in the top 100, even though the breadth of his track record is that 2010 was the fluke, not the real Chris Archer. I think the real Chris Archer has been the guy who really struggles to command the strike zone. I'm rooting for Chris Archer personally, but I think his best case scenario really is as a lockdown closer. But closer still, I mean, hard to have a top 100 guy be a setup guy like Lance Lynn.
And one of the things I did want to touch on before we wrap this up, kind of wrapping a bow on it, bringing it back around to the front, the top three. We did a feature in this about the looking back at past trios where you had three top prospects who stood out.
Because three is a magic number.
And the thing that jumps out is that we've looked back at, I think, 7 different trios like this.
Yeah. You looked at all 22.
Right.
Top 100.
But some years there's not. Some years, like the Matt Wieters. The Matt Wieters David Price year was a Matt Wieters David Price debate.
Right.
There was no question it was going to be one of those two.
And like Jim talked about earlier in the podcast, 2007 we had Dice K. It was Dice K, I think Alex Gordon, Delman Young. It wasn't quite this. It was tough. There was not a lot of separation between number one and number ten.
Right, Longoria was number 7.
Something like that. Yeah, we talked about that in the last podcast.
Right, and there wasn't much. There was a debate at the point.
I mean, Lincecum was 11. I mean, and he had been our number 2
there wasn't
draft
a lot
guy.
I'll put it this way: like 1997, we had Andrew Jones, Vladimir Guerrero, Kerry Wood. You could have made a case for Kerry Wood, considering his stuff, as number 1. That was
you
the
could have.
And so we look back at that, and the thing that jumps out is that when you talk about at the top end of the list, if you have three guys, usually two of them are going to be studs. Third one, it may not go over this so well.
Yeah, I mean, like two, and some of like Delman Young has been the worst of the 2005 trio between Maurer, Felix, and Delman Young.
And he's been the worst by a good, by a chasm.
Yeah, it has been, but he's still not a bad career.
He's not terrible.
He's an average offensive player and a below average defensive player. I mean, that's not good, but he's going to be a big
right.
lead for 10 more
but
years.
To give you examples, like 1995 is the one that jumps out. Like 1995, neither of us were.
JJ and I were covering the South Atlantic League back then.
Yes, we were covering Andrew Jones.
We were,
but in 1995, going into the 95 season. Came this close to being the best 1-2-3 that Baseball America would ever put out,
right.
And it's not going to get top.
That's right.
Which was, number 1 was Alex Rodriguez, number 3 was Chipper Jones, and number 4 was Derek Jeter. If you took number 2, Ruben Rivera, and just took him out and moved those other two up, if you went A-Rod, Chipper, Jeter.
I got to be honest with you. I think this year's trio is very comparable to that trio. I think Bryce Harper is going to be the Alex Rodriguez of the next era. The superstar who's a 35 to 45 home run guy every year and is the best player in the game every year and is unlikable. And if he winds up dating Torrey Wilson, well, I guess more power to Bryce Harper. But the point is, I think he's going to be the next A-Rod. And it wouldn't shock me if Mike Trout is the next Derek Jeter, a guy who's the all-American boy, the guy that you hold up. And who buys the gift baskets the next day? I'm not sure if Matt Moore is the Chipper Jones. I'm not going to stop making girlfriend comparisons. Yeah. Who leaves his wife for the Hooters girl? I just did that. I just went there. That just happened. But I do think Matt Moore could be epic. I mean, he really could. All three of these guys could. It wouldn't shock me, JJ, if all three of our top guys are Hall of Famers down the line. I know that's hyperbolic, but. It would not shock me.
The point I'm making is like, yeah.
Because all three of those are Hall of Famers, obviously.
Yeah.
A-Rod, Chipper, and Jeter.
Ruben Rivera.
Mexican League Hall of Fame.
Again, or
maybe.
Or if they said, you know, great gaffes in baseball history, they had a little display. It could be like, you know, Ruben Rivera, you know, biggest
with Jeter's glove.
Yeah, with Jeter's glove. But, or 1993, Chipper 1, Brian Taylor 2, Cliff Floyd 3. Cliff Floyd's not a Hall of Famer. Cliff Floyd, very good. Long-term career.
Yeah, and kind of a what might have been player because he never quite could stay healthy.
But the point I'm making is that, now, okay, so I'll throw this question out to you. If you said one of these three is going to bust, which one would you say? Which one do you say has the highest risk of being a bust?
I guess I'll say Matt Moore just because a year and a half ago, Matt Moore was struggling to find the plate in the Florida State League. And I believe in Matt Moore's current command. But a year and a half ago, he was a guy who had three plus pitches. Well, he had two plus plus pitches in terms of their action and their velocity and all those kind of things, but he had minus command. And we've seen that happen with all kinds of pitchers where they just lose it. So he's the most likely to bust, not because of injury necessarily. I like his delivery. I think he's clean. I think he gets out front great. There's nothing to dislike in the delivery. Since he made the adjustments with Neil Allen, who was his pitching coach at High A, with the hip turn, opening up to the plate, getting better extension out front, his stuff has improved and his command has gone up from a 20 to like a 50 big league command. But he has the biggest bust potential just because of that track record where he had a hard time finding the strike zone. For me, the other two, the position players, are sure things.
And let's just be honest, with pitchers, there always is a higher injury risk because the worst that, like, if Bryce Harper tears an ACL, like Chipper Jones did,
right,
it means, okay, he misses a year.
Right.
But when you come back, it's hard. There are not many injuries. Cliff Floyd came about the closest you can have to a
career-ending catastrophic
injury. Destroyed his wrist, and he came back from that.
I guess I should throw in with Harper, by the way, that there is the possibility that the makeup is such that he becomes a Delmon Young kind of guy. Delmon Young, I guess you have to consider him a bust just because he was getting compared to Albert Bell. Considering he's flashed it, he had the 1 year with a 125 ops plus. That should be every year Delmon Young, and that's not.
Well, but the other thing is that with Delmon, we talked about it before on the podcast, but the athleticism that you used to talk about.
Yeah, he's lost his athlete. He's just not a...
And with Bryce Harper...
That plays every day.
The concern you have, and look, I think I've said it on the podcast here. Everything, when I've asked people about it, what Keith's coming back is yes, if you are on the other team, you do not like Bryce Harper.
Right.
I personally do not find that part objectionable at all because...
Hence the A-Rod comp.
Right, but beyond that, there are a whole lot of great players over the history of the game who were terrible if you were on the other team.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've not heard with Bryce Harper generally is he's a terrible teammate.
Yeah.
And that's the part. But that being said, he is 19. The game has come extremely easy to him compared to basically everyone else. I mean, almost pretty much everyone else in the game, if you compare him to Bryce Harper, the game's come easier to Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper was dominating junior college baseball at a time where most, even great prospects, are good, solid high school players.
How about this quote from Jim's sidebar from a director of player personnel on an American League organization? I remember when our area scout first saw him, Harper was the best guy he saw all year, and he was a high school freshman. I mean, we talked about it
in your office one day. Yeah. Like, as an eighth grader, he was the best player in the state.
Yeah, our number one player in the state of Nevada was Nico Vasquez. And as an eighth grader, Bryce Harper dominated him in a personal workout for a club where Bryce Harper was supposed to catch. The pitcher didn't show up, so Bryce Harper pitched.
And was he off the mound?
He was 96 off the mound
as an eighth grader.
And he just dominated Nico. I'm probably putting this a little too strongly, but the scout used this word. He humiliated Nico Vasquez. He hurt Nico Vasquez's chances of getting drafted by that organization because he showed so bad in the workout. And the area guy had to kind of rehabilitate him with his cross checker and be like, look, you don't understand. Bryce Harper is, he's an outlier.
Right.
You can't judge him by what you just saw.
This is why...
By him competing with an eighth grader. That's the mind-blowing thing about it.
And that's what we're trying to get across here. It's like, if you said, okay, how could this happen that he fails? Yes, he could hit the big leagues and finally hit that point where it doesn't come easy, or as easy, and he doesn't make the adjustments. I don't think either of us believe that's going to be the case, because the reality of it is that... Even in the worst-case scenario for Bryce Harper, the worst-case scenario, he's still going to be at – I don't see him becoming a Delmon Young-level detraction in the outfield. He's going to be an asset in the outfield.
The worst-case scenario to me is that he's like a Carlos Quentin type, like a guy with maybe low batting averages, but he's still going to hit 25 to 35 home runs in an outfield corner. I mean, that's a worst-case scenario for Bryce Harper.
It's hard to see – him not hitting homers.
Exactly.
I mean, if you want to say it's going to end poorly, maybe he has contact issues.
Maybe worst case, he's Dave Kingman. You know?
That's the
Dave
that's
King
to me,
still
that's
hit 440 career home runs.
Right. That's the worst case scenario, which is that he's still actually kind of a useful player. And the thing with Mike Trout is that I think we both agree it's really I would put him as the safest of these three because
I agree.
For
and
one,
of course we got that wrong in the book, which is kind of funny. We had him as a low in the book. He was supposed to be a safe.
But he's the safest of these three because for one, his skills mean I guess the worst case scenario is he's the better Peter Borges.
Yeah, that's comparable. That's a good one.
Because he's got that Borges speed. Let's say the power never comes, and by that I mean that he ends up being a 10 to 15 home run guy, which to me that's the worst case scenario for him is that he becomes – well, he could be a 10-15 home run center fielder. The makeup by every estimation we've received is top of the line makeup.
He likes playing too much. I mean his inability to ask out of the lineup prompted him to go to the fall league and wear himself out. You know, he should have probably taken that fall league off.
So let's say the worst case scenario is he ends up being a 270 homer, 270 hitting, 330, 340 on base with some power kind
50
of
stolen base guy.
You know, or say 40, 30 or 40. This is worst case scenario. He's going to be a useful player because he's already passed through all the hurdles. He's now, he's at the cusp. He's at the big league level now.
Yeah, he's...
Barring injury, which again, barring a broken leg that saps his speed, it's just hard to see how he's not going to be a useful big leaguer.
Absolutely, and that's why those three guys are on our cover of the magazine. If you pick up the hard copy, Bryce Harper, Matt Moore, Mike Trout. Nice-looking cover of the magazine. Obviously, you can get the digital edition, and it's obviously all online now at baseballamerica.com.
And we do want to say thank you to our sponsor for the Top 100, Majestic.
That's right.
If you go on, if you're listening to this, if you haven't gone to the site, which I kind of imagine if you're listening to this, you probably have looked at the Top 100, but if you haven't, go on the site, baseballamerica.com, and it's all of our Top 100 coverage that's on there today is sponsored by Majestic.
You've probably also already heard this, but the news is breaking while we're on recording this podcast that Chris Carpenter is the compensation for Theo Epstein going from the Cubs to the Red Sox. Pretty interesting guy, JJ.
Better prospect going over than I thought.
Yeah, I think the Red Sox won that argument, which is that the past precedents for this, the prospects have been pretty good. And Chris Carpenter is a guy who he was 100 miles an hour in the 2010 Rising Stars game in the Arizona Fall League. Out of a bullpen, he's consistently been a 94, 96, maybe a little bit better than that guy. I think he's a guy who has a chance to contribute to the big leagues for Boston in 2012.
The big question for him has always been health.
Absolutely. Yeah,
he's had some injury issues.
He's had Tommy John
in
the past, but this was a seventh-round pick at a high school, unsigned, went to Kent State.
Kent State, which produces pitchers.
Yeah, we talked about it yesterday on the college podcast. They beat Georgia Tech this weekend, and this is not an upset. I mean, Georgia Tech, yes, it's expected to win that game, but Kent State always has pitchers. Scott Strickland, their head coach, was an assistant at Georgia Tech. Mike Birkbeck, former big leaguer, is a pitching coach there. Very widely respected. Hey, this is the same program that produced Dirk Hayhurst.
I was going to say.
They obviously know what they're doing with pitchers. So
Dirk Hayhurst, Chris Carpenter, now you got David Starr in there.
Andy Seinenstein, by the way, a big leaguer came out of there. There are others. But Kent State has a good recent history. Of course, the supplemental first-round pick last year, Susak. Not Susak. I can't remember the pitcher's name. Left-hander, he beat Texas in a regional. I just can't remember his name. But they have had a consistent recent track record developing pitchers. So, yeah, Chris Carpenter falls right into that. And that's one of the reasons he's had a successful professional career as well. So a little bit of breaking news here on the podcast that you'll get later. Obviously, it's been tweeted out during the show.
We'll have a Trade Central analysis of it at some point.
Absolutely, Matt Eddy, with that. So the Top 100 is up, Top 100 with analysis, sidebars, this podcast, the chat. All kinds of content at baseballamerica.com today. So follow us on Facebook, friend us on Facebook, or like us, I should say, on Facebook.
Like us on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter. We'll be back later this week with another podcast here at baseballamerica.com. For Jim Callis and JJ Cooper, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time. So long, everybody.